Chapter 10, The Perfection of Patience. Moreover, Subhuti, the Tathagata's perfection of patience is really no perfection. And why? Because, Subhuti, when the king of Kalinga cut my flesh from every limb, at that time I had no perception of a self, of a being, of a soul, or a person. And why? If, Subhuti, at that time I had had a perception of self, I would also have had a perception of ill will at that time. And so, if I had had a perception of a being, of a soul, or of a person. With my super-knowledge, I recall that in the past I have for 500 births led the life of a sage devoted to patience. Then also I have had no perception of a self, a being, a soul, or a person. Here is a new subject being introduced, the Kshanti Paramita, the perfection of patience, and the Buddha refers to a classic example of patience from one of his previous lives. The Buddha is saying that there are two kinds of patience. One, the mundane virtue, is where you just grit your teeth stoically and turn the other cheek, even though you would like to give the other person a sock on the jaw. The other, the transcendental kind, is where you are not, in a sense, conscious of anything being done to you by anybody. You are not fostering a notion of a self or a non-self, nor of the other person as being bound to either of these categories. With the one, you are doing your best not to act upon your anger. With the other, there is simply no possibility of anger. You see somebody doing something, but there is no trace in your mind of the idea that he is doing this to me. This does seem a very lofty level of attainment indeed. By some stretch of the imagination, it might seem possible to practice Dana Paramita. But the perfection of patience seems much more difficult to conceive of, especially under such trying circumstances as those on which the Buddha is here reminiscing. After all, the absence of any trace of anger does not entail any lessening of purely physical suffering. Perhaps we can get some idea of the nature of this experience by considering the relationship between a mother and her child. A child may quite deliberately hit and hurt his mother, but quite often the mother will not have much sense that he is hurting me, because she has a residual feeling of oneness with the child. In a sense, it is her own flesh and blood that is hitting itself. A third kind of patience is that practiced by the Hinayanist, who, by analysing beings and things into their constituent dharmas, realises the folly of becoming angry with a parcel of material and mental states. This is a proven method of controlling and even eradicating the grosser forms of anger, but unfortunately it does not stop you from thinking of the dharmas themselves as realities, which makes it impossible to get rid of the subtler forms of anger. This is why the Hinayana practice of Kshanti is said to be supported by dharmas. At a lower level still, you may exercise a degree of genuine patience relatively easily, when you make the effort to perceive clearly the reasons for apparently unreasonable behaviour. Someone may be, if not exactly sawing the flesh from your bones, still causing you a lot of trouble and inconvenience, but you may be able to see why it is happening and why that person is in that state. To understand all is to forgive all, as the French saying goes. Therefore then, Subhuti, the Bodhi being, the great being, after he has got rid of all perceptions, should raise his thought to the utmost right and perfect enlightenment. He should produce a thought which is unsupported by forms, sounds, smells, tastes, touchables, or mind objects, unsupported by Dharma, unsupported by no Dharma, unsupported by anything. And why? All supports have actually no support. It is for this reason that the Tathagata teaches, by an unsupported bodhisattva should a gift be given, not by one who is supported by forms, sounds, smells, tastes, touchables, or mind objects. The bodhisattva should produce a thought which is not derived from anything, not imputable, referable, or traceable to ordinary sense experience, or to any dualistic thinking. All we can say is that this thought arises from the deepest possible level within him, quite spontaneously. All supports have actually no support is not quite right. A better translation would be, that which is supported has no support. Basic perfection of wisdom. It is perhaps surprisingly obvious as well as true. If something depends on being supported by something else, it is not ultimately supported at all, because it is supported by something outside itself, a support which can be taken away at any time. So that which is supported is, in reality, or in absolute terms, unsupported. The only way you can be supported in any real sense is being by being unsupported. And further, Subhuti, it is for the weal of all beings that a bodhisattva should give gifts in this manner. And why? This perception of a being, Subhuti, that is just a non-perception. Those all beings of whom the Tathagata has spoken, they are indeed no beings. And why? Because the Tathagata speaks in accordance with reality, speaks the truth, speaks of what is, not otherwise. A Tathagata does not speak falsely. But nevertheless, Subhuti, with regard to that Dharma which the Tathagata has fully known and demonstrated, on account of that, there is neither truth nor fraud. This carries an echo of a passage in the Pali scriptures, in which the Buddha says that although he uses ordinary language, speaking, that is, in terms of I and you, he is not misled by it. And again, turning to the Lankaratara Sutra, there is the famous and arresting declaration that from the night of his enlightenment to the night of his parinirvana, the Buddha did not utter a single word. Another, less provocative way of putting this would be to say that no word that could be uttered could do justice to reality. As the Buddha did in fact speak out of his experience of reality, as everything he said, if you take the real meaning of it, was in accordance with reality, then in truth he did not say anything. And this is because, quote, he speaks the truth, he speaks of what is, not otherwise. A Tathagata does not speak falsely, unquote. There is, however, the inevitable rider to this, that we must not apply our dualistic notions of truth to the fact that the Buddha speaks the truth. He speaks not the truth that is opposed to falsehood, but the truth in the sense of the ultimate reality that must be understood in a deeper, non-dualistic sense. This does not mean that the Buddha might tell a lie. It means that on a metaphysical level, there is no distinction between truth and untruth to which the Buddha conforms. In darkness, a man could not see anything. Just so should be viewed a bodhisattva who has fallen among things, and who, fallen among things, renounces a gift. A man with eyes would, when the night becomes light and the sun has arisen, see manifold forms. Just so should be viewed a bodhisattva who has not fallen among things, and who, without having fallen among things, renounces a gift. Here are contrasted two ways of practicing dana, one conjoined with, or illuminated by, pranayaparamita, the other not, and therefore blind. A bodhisattva who has fallen among things gives something, thinking that it is a real thing that he gives, that he himself, the giver, is a real thing, and that the person to whom he gives is a real thing. Such a bodhisattva is in darkness, blind to the perfection of wisdom. The point has been made before. Only the language, the metaphor of sight, is different. The idiom fallen among things probably calls to mind the parable of the Good Samaritan, which speaks of the man who fell among thieves. But it is also echoed in the Gnostic expression, fallen into the world. Renouncing a gift is also new. It does not, of course, mean refusing a gift. It is simply a stronger version of giving a gift, suggesting a stronger sense of giving up any interests of your own whatsoever in the gift. In the sense of renouncing your own body, your Atma Bhava, it may even be said to represent an aspect of Kshanti. Furthermore, Subhuti, those sons and daughters of good family who will take up this discourse on Dharma will bear it in mind, recite, study, and illuminate it in full detail for others. They have been known, Subhuti, by the Tathagata with his Buddha cognition. They have been seen, Subhuti, by the Tathagata with his Buddha eye. They have been fully known by the Tathagata. Here is another passage that sounds familiar. In chapter 6, the Buddha avers that bodhisattvas living in an age of decadence, who, when these words of the sutra are being taught, will find one thought of serene faith, will be seen and fully known by the Tathagata. Here, however, it is those who will take up the steady practice of reflection, recitation, study, and communication who have been fully known and seen by the Tathagata. The past perfect tense used for this last verb might suggest that the Buddha is jumping the gun, but in fact he has already fully known and seen these people, because one of the powers of a Buddha is the faculty of direct perception into the future. The point being made here is to do with communication. By virtue of being a Buddha, the Buddha sees you with his Buddha eye, or at least knows you with his Buddha cognition. Being a Buddha, that is how he sees and knows. When you see the Dharma, you see the Buddha with your Dharma eye, and then there is a much more direct communication between you and the Buddha, rather than when you are looking at some thought or idea or even image of the Buddha, rather than at the Buddha himself. Now that you are really looking at the Buddha, well, now he can really look at you. So the Buddha looking at you is an aspect of you looking at the Buddha, and this is, in a way, a very strange experience. It is rather like the eyes painted on the sides of the harmikas of Nepalese stupas. If you look at them, you find that they are looking at you. This mutual seeing reflects a sort of duality, but also a sort of non-duality. You are not one with the Buddha, because after all he is looking at you and you look at him. But in a way, he sees himself reflected in you, and you see yourself reflected in him. So you are moving in the direction of non-duality, always remembering that non-duality does not exclude duality. We could say that being seen by the Buddha is another aspect of going for refuge. We use various terms to indicate different aspects of one and the same fundamental spiritual experience: entering the stream, going forth, the opening of the Dharma eye, and the Paravritti, a term taken from the Lankavatara Sutra, the turning about. To these we may add the idea of being seen by the Buddha with his Buddha eye.